Three, two.
You're listening to Around Comics for May of 2011.
Yay!
Folks, Christopher Niesman here. Thank you for listening to another episode of Around Comics, this one for May of 2011. And myself and Brian Salazar are joined by a wide cast of characters, including Mike Norton, Sean McKeever, Paul Mounts, and Tony Akins, as we recorded during the Challengers Comics and Conversation event and signing for the Fear Itself Youth and Revolt by Mike Norton and Sean McKeever. And we joined the conversation in progress talking about road construction and comics. Jokers in a second.
One of these comic book jokers. So, Sean McKeever, what are you doing here in Chicagoland? They let you back in.
I'm enjoying the traffic.
did you drive? Did you fly here?
I drove up. It was a great drive right until I hit the Illinois border, and then there's construction on I-90.
It's summer, man.
$3.50 tolls, and you know, for all the money that they collect for tolls in this area, those roads really are just horrendous.
Terrible.
Hey. I barely drive on 90 coming up here, but usually I'm on 294 going up to Wisconsin.
294 is always bad.
294, it's as soon as they're done doing construction, they have to start over again. Yeah. Well, because the stuff that they started with is bad now.
Yeah, they fill in holes with asphalt.
Well, there's a planned obsolescence with the roads to keep them employed. And here we basically just blame the people from Indiana.
But I forgot to add an hour to my travel time for Chicago traffic.
They fill in potholes with asphalt, and then in the winter the snowplows rip it all up. And so in the summer they get to fill them in again, and it keeps people employed. It keeps people working in Chicago. Well, what do you got against workers?
What would the tire industry do if you didn't have potholes for people to blow out their tires?
I blew out my first tire ever. 40-year-old, my first flat tire ever.
Mike, I wish you had your headphones on. You could hear what noise that's making.
No, I can't hear anything.
Put the headphones on.
Put the headphones on.
I can't hear anything.
In the headphones?
Out of the headphones?
Oh, really?
Technical difficulties.
Tech chest one,
oh, you
one,
can't
two.
Hear. Hold
Actually,
on.
Actually, it makes me not
hear. Not hear at all.
Is that better?
How's that?
Wait, you're three. I'm turning up. I'm probably
you
blowing.
Just turned me up.
I can't really hear much either.
Yeah, better?
You guys
turn me
really
up.
Can you just turn mine down? Because I don't know if I want to hear any of you guys.
Not that much.
There we go.
That's better.
How's that?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah? Is that good?
That's something special.
I'm gonna turn Mike down a little bit.
I can hear my S's.
Your hisses. You got a pop screen in front of you. It shouldn't be.
Let me pop.
Jesus.
There we go. Okay. This is a good show, right?
Well, it's fantastic so far. It's really.
This is where the music comes in. So we have the creative team, or the majority
creative
of the
creative force
behind Fear Itself.
We've started
Youth in Revolt.
We started 10 minutes
ago.
Oh,
yeah.
We're on. I thought you guys were just talking about traffic.
Well, that's what we do on the show now.
Oh, okay.
We just kind of roll in, chill style.
Traffic weather.
Oh, okay.
On the 11s.
Yeah.
Does that mean anything to anyone outside of Chicago?
I'm sure other cities, they have to do traffic and weather on the 11s. I'd imagine. I don't know. Do they do that in Ohio?
They have a guy named, he has some kind of name, like alliterative name, like Captain Carl or something.
Carl in the...
I don't remember what
the weather chapter one.
Captain Craig Sinclair or something like that? I don't know.
Oh, man.
Captain Craig.
Those small market, like smaller market... newsmen and weathermen, that kind of stuff. It's a bigger deal, I think, sometimes.
I listen to satellite radio, so I don't really know.
No, you listen to podcasts, nothing but podcasts.
I can't. I wish I could. Like,
I know Mike, he doesn't listen to Around Comics because he didn't even know Tom was gone.
So
I
haven't, to be here.
I have not listened to any podcast in like well over a year. I was addicted to Crankcast, and I listen to you guys all the time. But it's hard for me to do. Like, Mike can sit there and draw and listen to podcasts, and
you can't do that when you're writing
and stuff. Yeah. But I can't. Yeah, I can't do that.
We learned that really early on that we had huge amounts of
artists
and inkers, colorists, letterers.
They're all artists
that love the.
It's all covered in artists.
Yeah, you know, all of the artists.
Nice.
Actually, I have some lettering questions for Mike later. But all of the people involved on the visual side listen to podcasts, and writers like, I've heard of you, but I've never listened. So
writers are dicks.
Yeah.
So I don't even know why.
Case in point.
Oh no, I mean not you.
So
those other writers
are dicks.
The reason that you guys are here, and Sean has made it all the way from Arkansas.
Alabama. Kentucky?
Yeah.
Shut up, Seth Rogen.
I don't get that.
You look like him and you make faces like him.
He came all the way from...
Sometimes he sounds like Seth Rogen and Eeyore had a kid.
But you come all the way from Ohio to join your creative partner.
LeBron fan?
Yeah, the LeBron.
Ohio, I'm Cleveland, not a sports guy. Okay.
Green Bay, I can talk about. That's it.
No.
You guys we don't want to talk about Green Bay. You guys got the band back together again. It's the team from
Two Man Acoustical Jam.
From Gravity, back together again for Fear Itself.
From Gravity and Marvel Adventures Spider-Man and The Waiting Place.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and The Waiting Place, of course. Thing. Yeah, but so you're doing this big tie-in for Marvel's
with
summer
Gravity.
Event.
Again,
is gravity part of the youth in revolt? He's revolting youth.
Good prep for the interview there.
It's not like the books here.
The damn store Challengers is having this wonderful signing with you guys, and Diamond didn't deliver the books.
Diamond dropped the ball. Yeah. Diamond regrets the error.
I knew
what they like to say.
I knew
regrets the error.
Yes,
it's somewhere in transit.
It's kind of embarrassing, but
we're all gonna have a good time.
Well, okay. You don't work in the shipping department, Mike.
Care.
So you don't.
I really just came
it's
here
in
to
Memphis,
drink anyway.
Though, so I feel like I have to
home team. You, gotta, like, you probably know somebody there that.
they're all too busy watching the
they're
Grizzlies.
They're busy waiting, like wondering if we're not if the Grizzlies going to win or not.
Going to play the Mavs.
It's no.
No.
Well, we still got to win the series with Oklahoma.
Oh,
it's tied.
Is that going to happen?
Why not?
I'm asking.
Kevin Durant.
I've been all.
He'd probably be the biggest
the,
reason why not. But
we had a good chance. I thought. Yeah. I mean, we were winning for a while.
I haven't watched any of the playoffs except for the Bulls, so I don't even know what's going on.
The series is tied right now, I believe. So there's one more.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Around Sports.
I do. Well, one last sports thing. I do want to congratulate former Blackhawk Antti Niemi and the San Jose Sharks for taking the fucking Red Wings out of the playoffs. Thank
That's
you
awesome.
Very much, San Jose Sharks.
Where's
I appreciate
Brown,
that. Yeah.
You
gotta
love
Jeffrey.
The names of hockey players.
Antti Niemi, the Swedish something.
I don't know what they call it. Argument with Wood last night, where I was basically from 11 o'clock comics. I was being drunk and belligerent, which is not a shock on that show. We got into a big argument about
hockey?
Derrick Rose versus LeBron James, and.
Wow, well, Jesus. So, yeah. I don't know what the argument is. I don't know what, but, you know.
I said that LeBron James is the better athlete. Derrick Rose is the better basketball
teammate?
Player.
Athlete?
Better basketball
teammate?
Player.
I don't know.
Yeah, so.
I don't know.
We'll see. We'll know within 7 games.
It's above my pay grade.
Yep.
All right, back to comics. Enough sports talk. Sorry, guys.
Sean's getting ready to
We tend to wander.
Both cheated on their test.
If I have more beer, that's fine. You can talk about whatever you want.
Mike still harbors a little Derrick Rose animosity from his Memphis days.
Was there a suspension involved there?
No, he left. He got the F out before.
University of Memphis got in trouble. He's not.
He went to the NBA.
Fuck you guys. I'm a millionaire.
I'm going back home.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did. It's hot down here. I'm a millionaire. Fuck you guys.
All right. So the book that you guys are doing together. Tell us about it.
This is like when you go to a movie and you watch all the trailers, and when the trailers end, you go, "Oh, what the fuck did I come here to watch?" Youth in Revolt basically spawned out of the fact that I was, when I came back to Marvel, I was doing a miniseries called Nomad, which stars a teenage female version of Bucky from another universe. And that evolved into backups in Captain America, and then that evolved into a series called Young Allies, which was an ensemble, not a team comic, about five teen and college-age superheroes living in New York.
Lone Wolf Pack.
It was the Lone Wolf Pack.
Not a team book.
I was just watching The Hangover again last night, and that reminded me of that. Galifianakis, gotta love him. Young Allies starred Gravity, Firestar, Nomad, Spider-Girl, and Toro, who's a newer character. And that lasted a little while. And then that spun out into Onslaught Unleashed, which was a crossover between the Young Allies and the Secret Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And all this while, we were building up toward this miniseries happening, which we knew, you know, since last fall that we were going to do some kind of miniseries with young characters that would be attached to this event. And as the event took shape, then the plot took shape. And then when it came time to figure out who to draw it, Lauren Sankovich, the editor, she says, "Well, I'm gonna reach out to Mike Norton," and I'm like, "Oh, but he's DC exclusive, you know, he's not gonna do this.
You can't do this."
And so then I mentioned it to Mike, and he's like, "Well, my exclusive's coming up," and so here we sit today working together.
I
kind
of got sick of him sending like covers and other guys drawing Gravity to me, and he would do it. He did it with such glee in his heart, too.
Wow, did you see how awesome this guy did?
He really did.
All the time. This looks so much better than yours.
I would get an email with like a cover or like David Baldion's artwork from Young Allies, and I was just like, son of a bitch.
Well, then didn't David LaFuente start sending you his covers?
LaFuente just like unsolicited would send me stuff like,
nice.
He's just like, "Is this okay? Does it look okay?" I was like, yeah. looks fucking awesome.
Well, and Takeshi got to draw Gravity. That was
and
awesome.
And Takeshi did it too. Jesus Christ.
Driving you nuts.
Well, you should be glad that Gravity lives
on.
I loved it. I actually will have to say,
I'm a little
Mike,
jealous, but
that I like Takeshi's Gravity just a little bit better than
yours. Are you serious? you can't say that.
What a dick. That's not right.
I would never say that.
Wow. Guess who's sleeping in the fucking bathtub tonight?
Right? What's up with
it's
that?
Not possible.
No, because you created the character.
You can't do it better.
Even if he did draw it better, it's like I'd be like, nope, I changed his gloves. You did it wrong.
You can't.
Although, I don't know, like if James Jean drew it.
I always think somebody did it right. I mean, unless they put the tights on him instead of pants.
Well,
I,
you were in love with like Paco Medina's Gravity, except he drew Paco, the tight pants.
Yeah, he gave him tights, and I loved Paco Medina's. I love LaFuente's stuff. I loved his version of Gravity, actually.
Do you have like a favorite of everybody's who's drawn him?
Well, there have been so many. I mean, I liked it when, because I'm a big fan of Paul Pelletier.
And he
didn't draw him right, but I was so jazzed that it was him drawing him that I was like, yeah, that's awesome.
That was a fun story, too.
Yeah.
So, no, he was actually on my list for people I wanted for Youth and Revolt, but we went with you.
See, this is what I mean.
So nice to have him back, this is, right?
Well, to be working together. Maybe if he had called me like every couple of months to be on the Crankcast, this wouldn't be so obnoxious.
Why do you want to be on that?
Because I love being on the Crankcast.
Nobody likes being on.
And I like talking to Crank.
Like,
I miss Crank.
Crank doesn't like being on.
Oh.
I should have called Crank when I went to Cincinnati last month to go see the Midget Kiss Band, but I...
You really should have.
But I didn't get
didn't
to...
Didn't
I
you?
He would have went. I missed the show.
What?
He would have been all over that.
He might have come out for that.
Stop. Rewind.
Have you seen the Dr. Pepper commercials with the mini kiss? Yeah. They're called mini kiss. They're an actual cover band.
Yeah. They've been around for a while.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, mini kiss.
And Patrick Brower here, he showed me a video of an all-female Kiss cover band here in town.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I want to see
what are they called.
It's just called
Lady
Kiss.
Oh, Kiss Kiss.
Kiss Kiss.
No, I just made that up.
That's good, though. I like that.
I don't
that.
Know what they're called.
Lady Kiss?
Lady Kiss Kid, is lady. Good.
Well, Sean, Sal and I were talking earlier this week about
about a lot of the stuff that you've done.
I don't remember that at all?
Probably not. But here you are on another teen book, and that seems to be something that you either gravitate towards or kind of get.
No pun intended.
Exactly.
It's called Arrested Development.
Yeah, basically.
Is that okay? I'm
a 39-year-old teenager.
It's kind of like whenever we talk to Rucka, and it's like, well, Greg, you're writing another book with a strong female lead character.
Lesbian.
Who might be a lesbian. Drinks a lot.
A lesbian trapped in a straight man's body.
It could be.
I am.
So, what is it with you and the teenagers?
Yeah,
why are you so into kids?
Thanks for putting it that way. Really, you know what? Really, I'm just working my way to the preteen.
What is it about you and 12-year-old boys?
He doesn't want to draw. Doesn't want to write Robin.
You know what? It does come down to Arrested Development. I mean, I've tried to have. Like, I hear, like, such great answers from other people who do, like, teen characters and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's just something innate in me because I just haven't grown up.
Okay.
You know? And I mean, also, I just think that it really offers great drama because when you're that age, it's like...
Everything is a big deal.
It's like you're a quantum person in a sense. Like every decision you make could be huge. Have huge implications for the rest of your life, you know, and it's like a petri dish for what you're going to become, you know, as an adult, and that's, you know, when you're not set in your ways and you've got everything ahead of you, or you know, and you think you know everything. I mean, that to me is fun to write about.
Your guys' work on The Waiting Place, which is some of my favorite stuff of both of yours.
Thank you. And
Waiting Place kind of takes everything that you do in superhero comics with teens, but it's real world teen life, and I think that you capture that in such a great way, and you've taken that and kind of adapted it for, you know, Marvel and DC teens now. It's I guess it's just a lot of fun for you to write. Do you prefer that to, you know, writing more adult characters?
Not necessarily. I think what happens is you get known for doing something, and then you get hired to keep doing that.
I guess that's where I was going. Do you get afraid at some point of being typecast as, well, this is a teen book, so Sean would be a good guy to write it, but this is a more, you know, Daredevil. Daredevil comes up. It's like, well, Sean's not gonna, you know, Sean, he's not a Daredevil guy. He writes the kids.
Yeah. Well, it's a double edged sword for sure, because on the one hand, it's great to be known as the go-to guy for something because that means you're going to get hired for stuff, you know? But, yeah, at the same time, it would be nice to stretch my legs and do some other things, you know, write some other genres, write some other types of characters. But, I mean, the truth of the matter is things that I have planned for, you know, creator-owned stuff, the two that are on the... three actually that are on the forefront of my mind right now all have teenage characters, so it really is something that I, as you said, I gravitate toward writing naturally, but yeah, it certainly isn't the limit of my abilities.
But
it is the limit of Mike's.
That's all I can do.
So you get how
all you can do is draw Hitler with wings.
Yeah, that's about it.
Jetpack Hitler is awesome.
What was the last thing you guys worked on together before this?
Gravity.
It was Gravity.
Well, I mean, technically, it was that last.
Waiting Place.
Oh yeah, that's right.
We got out of our
DC exclusives to do that that last story. Yeah.
So going back and working again, was there any sort of I don't know, adjustment period? Was it just sort of like old hat back into working together?
The good thing about us is there isn't. I mean, we almost don't even need to talk to each other. I mean, I don't think we even did.
Except for that thing you fucked up today that we had to have.
That was a mistake. I have to admit that was a mistake on my part. Okay, I get it.
Wow.
Blue Beetle is not in this book.
I got an email. Well,
but it was like natural, wasn't it?
I got an email.
It?
In the middle of the, I got a panic email in the middle of the night. All of a sudden, I'm going to think, oh, well, I got to do something about that. Blah, blah. I don't even know why I'm talking about this. You guys don't even know what I'm talking about.
No idea.
And you never will.
But no, I don't. I think we know.
Oh, we will.
We've known each other for so long that, and I think we're pretty much on the same page as at least like our likes and dislikes and personal tastes as far as comics go and storytelling for that matter. I mean, Sean writes very cinematically, somebody that's making a movie. You know, the only other person I think that writes like you do is like Brian K. Vaughan.
I wouldn't like, say I write quite like that because I mean I don't write like a screenplay style.
No, I'm not talking about the format of it. I mean like just
because the way that like the, all that staccato shit and screenplays.
No, I'm talking about just the way you set up scenes and descriptions and even down to
describing the shots.
You know what your dialogue's going to be, and Vaughan is very similar. Even, I mean, and it's just like a vibe feeling that I got with you and Vaughn. Is just,
did you work? You worked with him on Runaways?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you guys are very similar in that way, and it's very super easy, you know, to work like that, you know, because I read the script and I just see the movie as I'm reading the script. Problem solving with these.
How did you guys meet? Because you're from Memphis. You're
Chicago. In Chicago.
At the Comic-Con.
Yeah,
okay. Were you just in visiting? You guys have never lived in the same town.
No, he was set up. You were with Slave Labor.
I was with SLG.
You were Slave Labor.
Promoting the first run of The Waiting Place.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. I used to drive up here from Memphis.
And you were working on The Badger with Mike Barron at the time.
With Barron.
Yeah, and I just came up there and I told I was a fan. I came up and I said I liked his book and just walked away. That was it. I don't even think I got anything signed or anything. I just said I like your book.
That's kind of cool.
That's exactly what I did.
And that was in between like people coming up and asking me, do you know where the bathrooms are? Or, you know, I'm looking for really early issues of Fantastic Four. Yeah. I'm at the Slave Labor booth.
Do you know where Rob Liefeld is? His booth is?
But I mean, are the hot dogs here any good?
But I mean, when I think about it in hindsight, especially the just, I mean, you guys know my personality. I must have really liked the book if I even
got it
to the table.
Yeah.
Because
I
don't ever do that.
I think every time I see you at a convention, there's always someone that you're, there's always a conversation with you about going, God, I really want to go and say hello to creator A, but I can't do it.
Every show there is one like that. I think in New York there were two. I did that. I did it with John Romita, and then I actually after that I was on a Romita high, so I went, I want to go talk to Terry Moore, and then I went and I talked to Terry Moore, and I totally wiped
tanked.
Out, man.
Farweed it big time.
Only time, like in recent memory, that I was outside of myself watching myself stutter.
And you're like, dude, stop.
And I'm like, shut up. Just shut up and go away. And that's what I did. And that only makes it more awkward. Because you're just like, all right, yeah, can I buy a cup? And I bought the cup and I left. And he's like, oh, that guy, I guess I've probably seen worse. And I'm sure he has, because he's got tons of fans.
That was me when I met Adrian Tomine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got like starstruck with him.
I would too. You know, he's one of those guys I wouldn't even go up to. I got Sean Dove to go to a convention and get an autographed book from him. I didn't even go up to him.
And so, it's weird because, you know, he writes the kind of like milquetoast awkward character stuff that we're into. Or that
who
we
is that?
Kind of
I'm not familiar with who that is.
Optic
Nerd?
Oh, okay, okay.
I wouldn't call it milquetoast.
No.
I would call it like, it's very sedate.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call it that.
A lot of shy hipsters and stuff.
A lot of shy hipsters.
I wouldn't call myself a hipster, but.
I farweed on Bruce Timm really bad in San Francisco.
That would be easy to do.
Yeah. It was.
Anybody of that kind of. I get like that with everybody.
Did you see him on?
I did it to Mike Norton a couple of times in the early years.
Mike, you're so cool. Did you see the Conan O'Brien thing?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Did you see that, Sal?
No.
Conan O'Brien
Oh, the Flaming Sea?
Yeah. Sure. And so he's at Warner Brothers Studios, and Bruce Timm is designing this character. And I'm sure that like 99.9% of the population that's watching this is like, oh, Conan's so cool. And I'm, you know, like the 0.5% of us is like, oh, fuck, that's Bruce Timm. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's
fucking nerd.
Pretty much.
I put a Flaming Sea mention in the Free Comic Book Day. The Young Justice.
Nice. Oh, nice. Yeah. Very cool. That's he's awesome. But
we all have our people that we freak out on.
Have you ever farleyed on anyone? It's not your style to do that.
I was pretty nervous going up to Howard Chaykin. That was probably the most nervous.
I wouldn't go up to.
More so just because I was really afraid that. Because there's a lot, you hear a lot of stuff about him that he's kind of a surly guy, he's not really. So I was more afraid that it would be a bad experience. I wasn't like freaking out. I'm a huge fan of his work, but I was just afraid that it would be a bad experience. And I didn't want to walk away from meeting Howard Chaykin.
And you ended up talking to him for an hour.
It was one of the best con experiences I've ever had. He was phenomenal. Yeah, we talked television for an hour or more, and he was awesome. So no, that was great. I'm trying to think if I ever. I mean, when we talked to Byrne, that was sort of the same thing. Like I was more concerned with it being a bad experience, like him being a dick and walking away hating John Byrne, which is not something I'd ever want to do. Even after all the years of him,
that's
the most
nervous
stuff
I've ever seen you.
Yeah,
on,
that was.
On the show.
I mean, well, and like Mike, Mike grew up, wanting to be John Byrne, and me too. Mike got a lot closer than I ever did, but. He, that was the guy that,
And that wasn't the case in that interview at all. It's one of the best.
Fortunately, that's such a rare happenstance in comics, I can definitely count on one hand.
Bad experiences?
The bad experiences I've had with comics. But then for every one of those bad experiences, there's so many wonderful ones. And things just like, I wound up at an anime convention in Cleveland. Randomly, they decided to go with comic guests the 1 year, and the only comic guests were me and Walt Simonson.
Oh man!
Oh wow!
That's awesome. I forget a little bit.
Have you guys met Walt?
No,
he's such a nice guy. Yeah, he's such a nice guy.
He's a super fucking nice
guy.
That's
what I've heard.
And he swears just about as much as me, which is cool. But he's like super nice, and every time I see him at a show now, it's like we're old friends, because we got to spend that whole weekend hanging out.
I know who I freaked out on. I'm sorry, I didn't
mean to. Go ahead. I made my point.
From Battlestar Galactica.
Admiral Ty?
Not Hogan. Adama. What's his name?
Edward James Olmos.
Edward James Olmos, I sort of clammed up on.
Did you hear what happened with him and Colonel Ty that year?
No.
At Chicago?
Me and Mike and Franco and Art. We were all hanging out.
Oh, no, I was there. I was sitting there with
you.
You
were there.
Yeah, I was there. That's when I freaked out because he walks up. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and tell the story.
For the audience, I guess.
They had to be drunk, right?
They were already drunk. Well, the one had, it was an old
style. Hogan, he walked up with an old style.
The way they were talking, they seemed like rambling.
Yeah.
Well, I went, since I drove up here, I went to the liquor store and I just bought a bunch of beer and a cooler. And so we all set up camp next to the bar, and we were drinking our good beer for cheap, and they were drinking mediocre beer for expensive prices. And the talent was walking by and stuff, and apparently either Art or Franco had met one of them before
Colonel
at another
Ty.
Show.
Hogan
gave him advice.
Art didn't know who he was at all.
Okay.
And he was out. Yeah, Art had no idea. He had never watched the show. Didn't know who he was at all. He's standing outside, and the guy came up to him, or I don't remember how they met outside. And Art, being Art, he just started talking to him.
Sure.
Didn't find out, I think, until after the show that he was on Battlestar Galactica, but like just kept running into him during the show the whole time and just talking to him like he was anybody else. He didn't know. Yeah. He had no clue who he was. And then, it's like every time he sees them, they seem to,
That was amazing, though. I mean, he just calls them over, and then they come over, and then they see that we've got beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was like, oh, we just made new friends.
But that was, and I was sitting there, and I was just like, because I grew up, I mean, you know, well, everybody did, but.
You were like, say the line. Say the
line. No. Well, that was the next year. That was last year. But with Adamo, with Edward James Olmos, I mean, like, growing up, I'm a Latin kid growing up in a very white neighborhood in the suburbs, and watching him, you know, as a kid.
Blade Runner.
You watched Stand and Deliver like three times a day.
Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. No question.
What is Capulis?
Selena. Stand and Deliver. You know, so yeah, Edward James Olmos is a big, kind of a big deal. But Battlestar Galactica.
You're Latino?
And for me, as an acne sufferer, he's, you know. For me, he's a real big deal.
He's an inspiration. Yes. But yeah, so that was one of the few guys that I was just sort of. But Hogan, no, Hogan. The next year, I was sort of rude to him, and I made him say,
"The old man's going to hear about this."
I like forced him into saying that.
Yeah, I remember that,
and I like made him say it, and I felt kind of shitty afterwards. But I was like, "When am I ever going to have the opportunity to have him say it?"
But you know,
he was great. He was
when those two were hanging around South that year. Didn't it seem like when they do those scenes when they're drunk together on BSG?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like absolutely. They're kind of when they're actually and kind of swaggering a little. Yeah. That was fantastic.
Because Olmos was like giving us advice about something.
Yeah,
he was getting really philosophical.
He was on the phone, and then he's like, guys, and he got all of our attention.
He's like, let me give you some advice or something like that. Yeah. And then he went on talking.
He was standing deliver. He was
like, I have no idea what he was talking about.
Well, wasn't he talking about? He was talking about something comic related at some point. Like he was
talking about.
Yeah, it was.
It may have been about like forging your destiny kind of thing.
Something like that. He was trying to be inspirational.
And then Margot Kidder came by.
Oh yeah.
And Art shouted out to her, and then she turned around and she says, "Isn't it past your boys' bedtimes?" And we were all creeped out.
Where was I this night?
Whoa, why couldn't you have died about 20 years ago and left the
metal? I don't want a smoke bomb and disappear.
I don't want to think about Margot Kidder in a bed, you know?
That was a good show. That was a good
show. That was a fun show. That was my last show. Chicago, yeah. But that was, well, that was only 2 years ago. I've only missed two Chicago cons since 93.
Wow. Very good.
I haven't missed any since.
Are you going this year?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I didn't see you on the guest list.
Oh, well, I guess maybe I'm not. They haven't, I guess.
Maybe
they
I've overlooked.
Well, it's not like you're working on anything major.
No, not at all. Nothing like a
tie into the big
It's not like I haven't worked on a summer event for the past 4 years.
And a free comic book day.
Yeah. Book. I mean, well.
Have you worked? Yeah, you worked on all the. Well, I know that you're the Trinity.
I worked on.
Oh, yeah.
Countdown. I worked on.
Yeah.
I don't remember that book at all.
Oh, that's right. You were on that.
I don't remember that book at all.
You doing okay? Glad you landed on your feet.
That was the great disaster.
There was something else. I know there's something else on there. What is the other thing I worked on? I forget.
Brightest Day?
No, I
didn't. Did you do anything Brightest
Work
Day?
On Secret Wars?
Yes. I ghosted for Mike Zeck. A lot of people think it was Mike Zeck.
That was awesome.
I thought it was Rob Granito.
Oh, well, me and him are tight.
And Josh Hoops.
We're all the same guy. All right? Here's an exclusive.
I don't know
we're
Mike
all
Zeck.
The same guy.
Where is Mike Zeck? How come he doesn't?
He's in Florida.
He doesn't want to do interiors.
He wants to do some covers.
He doesn't even want to do new covers, right? He just wants to do recreations.
He'll do recreations, and they're
really
and they're quite expensive. But
yeah, I would love to trick him into doing a cover making it a recreation of something.
Have a really bad cover made, and then tell him I want a recreation.
I want him to do a recreation
of
Spider-Man coming out of the grave, except it's gravity.
Oh my God, that would be great!
I'm
going to do that because he'll do that.
Bitch, it's my idea.
I don't care. I'm rich. I'm going to get two, and then I'm going to burn the other one.
Oh damn!
That would be awesome.
Phenomenal. There are a lot of homage covers like that. The last one I can remember was the Remender.
The Punisher?
Yeah, the Punisher
scene. Oh, the 120, yeah. Amazing 129 cover?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, do you ever think about doing those homage covers from, you know, like those 80s books?
I have, actually. I mean, I'm sure when I was at Devil's Due, because they were all about that kind of... Speaking of Devil's Due, but we... I think when I was at Devil's Due, we were the last people to actually get Zek to do interiors.
Oh, no kidding.
Because we got him to do a G.I. It was like a G.I. Joe issue. We wanted to. He was like, let's get Mike Zek to fuck.
Because he's awesome. So you're the ones who got him to never do interiors again. after working with Devil's Due, he never worked with comics.
I wasn't in charge of that stuff. I just talked to the artist. Because the whole deal was that Zek did all these great G.I. Joe covers. He never drew an issue of G.I. Joe.
I didn't know that.
No. So we got him to draw an issue of G.I. Joe.
I loved his covers. I never read G.I. Joe. And I wasn't into the show or anything, but I loved his covers.
So we got him to do chops? We got him to do our covers, and then we got him to do a whole issue. And I don't think he...
Where's that original art?
Oh, that's a good question.
You know, I wonder where that is.
It's got to be. Yeah, I'm sure somewhere. Josh doesn't have it anymore.
Somewhere. Zek's awesome.
Oh, speaking of,
every time I think of the Punisher, I think of...
It's not the scene in the beginning.
It's him in prison, like sitting on a concrete step, curling dumbbells. Yeah. I don't know why, but whenever I think of the Punisher, it's like him sitting...
He's just got prison.
No, it's like it's the idea of the Punisher in prison surrounded by criminals, and he doesn't give a shit. He's just out there, sure, that too. Guy pumping iron a little bit in prison. There's nothing... What's wrong with that? What? At least I don't like little boys.
But on the... I'm just saying.
If it's a prison for little boys?
Well, that's a different story.
Then you're both right. The homage thing, I don't do that a lot, mainly because...
I was trying to think if we did one for The Waiting Place, but we didn't.
No.
The closest we came was one that was pseudo Breakfast Club cover, or Breakfast...
Yeah,
you know.
But that wasn't inspired by it.
It just wound up being that way, yeah.
Yeah. But, it was some lunch meat on a statue, and, you know, that's not...
Oh, you had mentioned original art a minute ago. We'll bring up some headlines here. Do you see what the Frank Miller splash page sold for out of Dark Knight Returns?
And I still think that
how much?
$450,000.
Yeah,
it's I think that's right.
Almost $500,000.
No, I do. I think
it's iconic. It's an iconic,
it's a very important piece
exactly.
Of
and
artwork.
As we sit here in the Rogues Gallery, you see. I mean.
But I remember the
splashes of mics that you can buy for a mere $200.
Well,
I'm just thinking.
I mean, in our business, right? I mean, there's certain comics that you're going to say are going to be really expensive. And
yeah, there's a few iconic.
I want certain pages to be like
worth a lot of money.
Expensive,
yeah, sure.
What would you put you on the spot? What would you value the first page of Watchmen number one at?
The first.
First
didn't it just
sell?
I know what it auctioned
grid,
for.
Right?
Yeah, with I know. It just sold not that long ago.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But that's iconic.
That's sure. iconic, oh, and it's probably my favorite comic book ever. So, I mean.
Well, you value it, and I'll tell you what it auctioned for.
Six figures? Sure.
$15,000.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I thought $450,000 is like an order of magnitude high.
Crazy
well, you know
amount.
What? I mean, well, considering that it's, I mean, it really is just a 9-panel grid with a watch and blood.
And this is exactly it.
It's not Batman and Robin jumping off a building.
Yeah. That was a big deal.
I had talked to some high-end original art dealers, and we had talked about that, and I was like, hey, man, it only went for $15,000. This is the first page of what is considered the greatest graphic novel in the history of comics. And the guy basically said, yeah, but there's none of the iconic characters in the series.
There are rules that apply.
The page where Rorschach jumps into the window would have gone for much more.
I mean, Stuart Eamon and working on Fear Itself.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's got a page where it's just the president talking for five panels, he's not going to sell that page for as much. Go ahead.
When John Byrne did that Spider-Man chapter one, he decided that on every page he would somehow have a drawing of Spider-Man, even though he was telling the origin story, so that he could sell that original art.
Sure.
And I've worked with artists
absolutely
who often ask for double page layouts so that they can sell that, because they can sell that at a premium.
Sure.
They try to get as many splash pages as they can, because they can sell
that
at a premium.
It's a cottage industry for
artists. Certain extent,
I mean, a lot of artists, so,
and this is getting off the subject a little bit, but I...
There's no such thing on this podcast.
Yeah, I know. We've already gone well beyond. It kind of... I get that, and it's right, and you know, comics should be splashier than they are right now. I think
definitely,
you know, but I also think that if your goal at the end of the day is to sell the original art as much as you can, rather than
making a good comic,
then you're not doing the right job. You know, you should be paining and selling your art.
Pinups at conventions.
Yeah, do commissions.
Well, I have a bit of a theory and I know someone that at one time ran an auction house, not for original art but for antiques, and this sort of rumor came up when the Action Comics number one sold for $1 million and the Batman sold for $1 million,
Detective 27
sold for $1 million was. The theory, the rumor is out there that those aren't really selling to anyone for those prices, but for an auction house that is going to sell original art or is going to sell old comic books, it sounds really, really good when you sell
and it raises the bar for Dark Knight Returns
for $485,000, because now the rest of the pages are worth that much more. Because it's all perception. It's all and knowing someone, like I said, someone that ran an auction house, you know, any
that
auction
would
they ran,
the audience.
They would seeding an audience with people that you know is something that they would absolutely do. So the idea that you would sell that in a price of, you know, an astronomical price to someone that you know to drum up better business for the rest of the work. You know
what kind of bugs me though is that I wonder if any of these big art sales have ever benefited the artist.
No.
They're usually already sold.
At this point.
You know, like the day after that happened, Frank Miller is at home going, fuck.
Yeah, well,
I don't think Frank gives a shit at this point.
He's not like Len Wein getting his hand shaken by Hugh Jackman and going, well, I didn't get a fucking cent for your movie, but all right. You know, I mean, Frank's doing okay.
Yeah, he did all right. Well, you know, speaking on iconic pages, you know, that scene out of Dark Knight Returns is one that we all have committed to memory and think about. What are some of the other iconic pages that
you
guys
can think
of?
Well, out of that book, I have one.
Out of just comics.
There's
tons of them.
Like, that page is
Batman
great.
Batman on the horse?
No, actually, one of my favorite pages, I don't know if it's one of my favorite pages out of that book, but one of the ones that, for whatever reason, sticks in my mind the most and has always had a real impact on me was, I think it's in issue one, where he just comes back and he's chasing the guys in the car, and they end up ditching the car and running into the house, and he's running in after him, and there's two cops there, and he turns around and he sort of sticks a thumb at himself and says, "These two are mine." And for whatever reason, that page, that moment in that book always really stuck with me for some reason, because it was just like, I don't know. It was just the moment of him
established the character
saying, "I'm back, fuck you, I'm taking care of this, you know, back off," to these, you know, the Gotham police officers.
I think of pages, and I'm sure that Mike did this, I'm sure that you did this, Sean may have done this.
No,
but,
never.
You know, whenever we were growing up, there were the comics that, I mean, you would just wear out, that you read them so much, and I would draw, you know, panel after panel of my favorite pages. There are panels of John Byrne X-Men comics that
I'll tell you
I probably now it's my turn.
That's a great idea. Mine's not even nearly that cool. It's actually something I traced. A lot of I don't even know what issue it is. It may have been 12 of Alpha Flight, and this is where I always make this joke with people that all my artwork is traced from old issues of Alpha Flight,
which is awesome.
It's easy because there were no backgrounds.
There were trees and rocks.
I will bring this up every time somebody says that. That is not true.
What was there, it? Was it Sasquatch and Snowbird in a snowstorm?
This is what
storm?
Okay.
Burn did just as many backgrounds as Kirby.
There are so many. I mean, yes, there are plenty of backgrounds where there's not. But there's lots of dialogue there. How do you even notice?
I'm joking. I love those fucking
there's
comics.
It's a panel. I forget what the rest of the page is, but there's a panel of North Star flying over some beautiful Canadian building. It looks like a college or a church or something like that. And I traced that a million times, yeah. Seriously. And I would trace it, and then I'd put my own character in there.
Why that scene?
Because I thought it was such a...
a beautiful panel.
It's a beautiful foreshortened
panel. I think
panel
I know. It's a big
Star,
it's a big shot of him, right?
Of North Star flying towards you. He really knows how to draw a human body, and it looks like he's coming at you.
Yeah,
it doesn't look corny. And it looks perfect.
Strong and dynamic.
And that's when I fell in love with John Byrne's artwork.
Sure.
I was like, this guy can draw anything and make it look natural, but still cartoony,
dynamic
enough.
And exciting.
It's, as a kid, I'm interested in it. I mean, if it was like looked like a real person, I would be bored by this. But he made it look cartoony enough, yet naturalistic. That I'm like, I got to figure out how to do this.
That's how it starts.
I mean. Yeah. I could probably buy that page for $200 right now. I don't know.
No,
actually,
not early Alpha Flight.
But
it's not one of those. It's not like it's not like a Man of Steel page. It's not like
an
X-Men. Yeah, it's not a page that you would sit there and go.
There were like full pages of Alien Legion that I would recreate, and which
those you can probably get for $75.
Well, you know, I just got an Alien Legion page from issue 2.
How
that
much?
It was one $200 less than $200.
Was that Cam Kennedy?
It was Frank Sirocco.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah, the best one.
He did the best stuff, and
Jugger on it.
I got it for $65.
See, I told you. I said $75.
That's just in case his wife is listening.
No. I did. I got that one for $65. I got a color one from the A Gray Day to Die graphic novel. That was a little bit more, but some of those pages are just ingrained in me. But the one I keep coming back to in my brain is the X-Men page. The Now It's My Turn.
I mean, sure.
Yeah, for what I mean, I don't know.
Did you ever do that? Did you ever like redraw?
Trace?
Yeah, no, not no. Trace. Redraw.
No,
redraw.
I didn't.
I did it.
I didn't
all the time,
really.
All the time.
I would do what you were saying. Like, look at a page and then put other characters in a page.
Oh, but this,
of
I mean,
the
you
same
gotta,
thing. You know
I
what
mean,
I mean?
I wasn't kidding when I said I did this over and over again. So right. I mean, I did several with North Star in it, but eventually I'd get bored of that, and I'm like, I'm going to draw somebody else in here.
Yeah.
So I mean, if I had all of that together right now, it'd be like, I wish I could make a comic book out of that. A comic book of just like this one page that I redrew and redrew.
It's funny. I just found. I was cleaning out my garage this spring and found a portfolio full of like old stuff from when I was a teenager, just like old drawings and stuff. And I mean, just this horrible, horrible artwork. That
you're like, I remember it looking so
and my
good.
And my kids were like, oh, this is awesome. And I'm like, no, this is going in the fire. And I'm fighting with my kids, like throwing it into a fireplace, burning it because it was just so terrible.
I think about that sometimes. Like, if I were to have kids, I don't know why I thought about this, but I think it was because somebody asked me to go to their kid's school to talk to them, and I thought about it. I was like, you know, when I was a kid, and art teachers would see stuff, and they're like, oh, Mike, you're so good. You're so good.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't know if I could judge that with a kid. Like, if I saw that a kid's art, I'm like, this is crap.
Terrible. Your anatomy is terrible.
How do I judge what an 8-year-old can draw?
Your own kid, you'll have an innate ability.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, okay, that kid is like, is this good or is this not good? I can't tell. I'm always going to be like, well, I can fucking do better than that.
Competitive nature.
No, seriously. This is why I don't have kids.
Son, you suck. This is how daddy does it.
You know, I mean, I'm afraid that if I had kids, I mean, and they bring it, it's like, don't bring that weak stuff in here.
I refuse to let my kids beat me in thumb wrestling. It's not going to happen until they legitimately
punch me in the face before we do the thumb wrestling. And they're like stunned.
One, two, three.
I will not allow it. Well, you have to earn it. You cannot. I'm not giving it to you. I'm not letting you. No, it's yeah. I look at the stuff. I mean, it was some just and stuff I had done like from some art classes that I had taken in my 20s, and even that is just like, oh, you know, some airbrushing crap that I, and I was just like,
yeah.
Oh my God, this is so horrible. My kids, you know, my kids are just like, oh, it's this is awesome, you know. I mean, my son is anything, you know, anything that even resembles a superhero, he thinks is awesome at 5 years old, but it's like, no, son, this is going in a fire. You have to watch it burn.
And back 20 years ago, it was us redrawing panels and a young Sean McKeever retyping
Chris Claremont.
Passing it off as himself.
Yeah, I was talking about the
Professor
totality
Xavier
of my power.
Is a jerk.
You drew too, though, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember any of the stuff from when I was really young. I don't think I redrew too much comic stuff. But the one thing I really remember, an image that I drew over and over again, trying to get just perfect, and I even used it. I sold comic books out of my parents' hardware store as a teenager. And so I was making a promo poster for the new Wolverine series, which was like, what, 88 or something. And the image that I used and that I was drawing so much was the cover to Incredible Hulk 340, the McFarlane
with the claws
and Hulk's reflection in
them. Yeah.
I just loved the way that he had Wolverine's face in that grimace. And even though the reflection doesn't technically work or whatever, it's just a really cool image. You know?
It's iconic.
And the coloring on the inside is pretty garish.
It really is when you look at it.
Yeah. But that cover just.
Oh sure.
I could stare at that forever. You know.
Yeah.
That was one, and then there was actually a John Byrne spectacular Spider-Man cover somewhere around the 110.
Is that the
region.
Black one?
The black. Yeah. Yeah, where he's in the black costume hanging upside down.
Yeah, that one's beautiful.
And I did a really nice pastel color piece of him hanging down like that. Yeah. Which I had to do a certain amount of it by myself because a lot of the musculature and stuff was blending into the background.
Yeah. Flat.
And then underneath was like the Spider-Man circle, like the spider light circle.
Right, right.
Cool. And I think I still have that somewhere. Actually, I'm gonna sell that for $450,000.
Right. Bringing it back, another one that I drew over and over was the Mike Zeck Captain America with Wolverine.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That's
from the annual. God, I love that cover.
Yeah. Annual.
You should see,
that's
if you go
one.
To his website, you should see like some of the recreations he's done of that one.
Yeah.
Like, he'll change the characters up to whatever people want.
Is the Iron Man artist,
Bob Layton?
Oh, Layton.
Yeah, Layton does shit tons of recreations of Iron Man.
That.
Oh, yeah. Go to his website, and he does a bunch. I think that's all he does now is the same kind of thing.
Well, that's cool because he's like actually a much better artist now than he was when he was working on Iron Man, I think. So that would be pretty awesome.
Redo Demon in a Bottle. Now,
do it. I drew like... there were other things that, for whatever reason, I remember drawing all the time was like... The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I drew them constantly.
I did
like,
that a lot.
Yoda. I remember drawing Yoda's face like over and over again.
It's funny you bring that up because I mean, oh my God, I love Star Wars. I learned how to draw sequentially from, you remember Big Chief writing tablets? Like they would give them to you in first and second grade.
Yeah,
and you'd practice your cursive writing or your script writing on there, and I would draw the scenes from Empire Strikes Back on each page, and that was my first sequential artwork.
Stormtroopers drew shit tons
of
Stormtroopers.
That's the only time I've ever drawn Star Wars stuff.
I was talking to
Scott Alley actually at C2E2, and he was like, you know what? I fucking want to draw some
Star Wars.
Because I've never drawn Star Wars except for when I was like...
It is like one of those weird things.
10 years old.
I would love to see you on a
Yoda
Star Wars
and
book.
I want to write Star Wars.
And Vader.
Let's do it.
And then there was another thing. E.T. I probably drew E.T.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not an easy one.
Like a million times I've probably drawn E.T. I could probably sit down and draw E.T. right now with my eyes closed. And I don't know why, but... It was just for whatever reason that.
What? Why are you signing that?
Because they got these instead of Fear itself.
A Queen Sonya?
Queen Sonya.
Yeah, they got an issue of Queen Sonya instead of.
Because Diamond is so good at what they do, instead of giving us Feared Self, you can roll number one.
Looks like this one.
They gave us Queen Sonia number, I don't know, whatever. The same quantities.
16.
The wrong, number 16. Thank you, Sean.
That's good enough. That's close enough.
So we reported it Tuesday night, and they said, don't worry, we're going to emergency ship you the what you ordered.
They sent you more? Queen Sonia?
Do you see that? Yeah, that'd be great. It said it's more Queen Sonia. So today when I called and talked to my rep, after I emailed, then I had a call. She called back and said, I just called the warehouse. They haven't responded yet. I double-checked the paperwork. You absolutely submitted it in time. We put an emergency ship-out request. It should have taken 2 days. I'll let you know as soon as I hear anything.
That was the last you heard.
So instead, everyone gets to buy a coupon for Fear Itself, Youth, and Revolt number one.
Oddly enough, both of them have gravity.
I don't think gravity's working on those breasts.
No.
I bought the new Punisher Max hardcover.
Well, there you go.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
That rivals any of the Garth Ennis, Steve Dillon stuff. That was so good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So great. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'll let you get back to what you're doing.
How are you, buddy?
No, it's good. It's all you.
I'm tired.
I'm hosting.
Tired?
Go sell comics. Yeah. This is awesome, by the way. Every time we're here, we talk about challengers, but we're here for Free Comic Book Day. Mike Norton and Chris Mitten were set up.
Yep.
Sal came by. I dropped in. And I was thinking about this. The conversations come up every year about Free Comic Book Day and how it's a great event and a great way for comic shops to get people in to stores. And Challengers does a great job of taking that energy and taking that idea and saying every month is a Free Comic Book Day event for us.
Yeah.
So here we are less than a week after Free Comic Book Day, and they've got a signing, and there's the art show going on, and they just do such a good idea of taking what Free Comic Book Day offers for so many retailers and recapturing it over and over again.
For them, too. I mean, they just put this together. They've got tons of stuff. I mean, seriously, like you said, every week.
Every week, some sort of event.
I was looking at YouTube.
I'm watching John Suntris and making sure he's not stealing the beer.
I was looking at the schedule, and I didn't even know the stuff. I didn't know that Raphael's going to be here.
Is Albuquerque going to be here?
I don't know if he is, but I know
it's an art show. I don't know if he's coming.
I hope he is.
Kelly Sudaconic.
Stuart Immonen's work is going to be here. Is he going to be here?
I don't know. I hope he will be.
We should have asked Patrick.
There's a really big signing coming that I know about that he hasn't announced, so I don't want to talk about it. But I was just like,
I don't know, seriously?
But yeah,
that big.
It's a big. I think probably around
Steve Ditko. Around October time.
Nice. Yeah, no, they're doing such a fantastic job at this gallery. It's a blast to come down there all the time and see the art. And
they actually have they have an intern that started today from the Art Institute of Chicago
to work the gallery.
And her job is to work
curate the gallery.
Yeah, to work the gallery.
I want them to turn the gallery into more of like an antiquity shop. Sort of like, I want to see old...
Cursed items.
Wands.
Potions.
Dragon claws.
Ark of the Covenant.
Agamotto.
Yeah, cool stuff like that.
Oddities. Yeah, comic book oddities would be cool. I have Agamotto, and it's...
That would be awesome. Why wouldn't you have that? Like a glass case with the Eye of Agamotto.
They should totally have that.
They had it in Thor.
Damn it. McKeever's actually making me thirsty for an old style here.
Well,
the old swill is going down tonight.
That's on you. I don't think I could ever get thirsty.
The only way to drink it is in a can.
This is one of the things I share with McKeever is there is no. There, a lot of you guys are very snappy about your beers.
Well, I am too, though.
Whatever. You drink
old style.
Yeah, but this is like Kreuzend. Retro awesome. I'm going.
It's fully Kreuzend.
It's still shitty.
If I wasn't here tomorrow, I'd be going to an ale fest. On Friday, I'm going to another ale fest.
Well, I'm sorry.
You're not a hipster. You're drinking old style saying it's retro awesome, and you're going to ale fest.
It's retro awesome.
You're a fucking hipster, dude. No. Sorry to tell you.
I'm sorry, but I'm 39. I can't be a hipster.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You can. Have you not watched Portlandia?
Also, I like the Bee Gees. I can't be a hipster.
Bee Gees.
He's not a hipster.
And ELO.
Boz Skaggs.
And I do not have an ironic mustache or skinny jeans. Would you want me to have skinny jeans?
I'm sort of
hipster drink PBR, but old style is pretty much the same.
It's the same thing.
The only reason anybody old drinks old style.
Old style is for Chicago hipsters. PBR for every others.
I used to drink PBR.
That's true.
Back when I couldn't afford anything
I always say that I'm more punk rock than any hipster because I don't give a fuck what I drink.
Well, I like this is a good Milwaukee beer, and I grew up in Milwaukee.
You don't have to justify it. I don't. I drink. I like beer with taste. That's all.
I don't have taste,
but I like something to taste, like have flavor. Like,
if I can't have taste, goddamn it,
beer will. The first beer I ever had, I was 6 years old and had some of my dad's Pabst.
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
We were working on the pool, and I had a little PBR.
I don't remember. Probably.
So that stuff just makes me think of the old days.
That was your first beer?
I've got nostalgia for it, yeah.
Mike, first
beer? My first
beer was a Budweiser. It was at a vacation I went on with my friend Matt and Harry. We went with Matt's parents, who were really strict fundamentalist Christians, and they took us to this.
They got you drunk.
This is like in 2007, by the way.
No, yeah, this was last year. They took us to this house on the river, on the Tennessee River, and it was a rental. So
they molested you.
It was owned by other people, so when we get there, the refrigerator's already stocked.
Oh, nice.
So, and there's multi-levels, so immediately, as soon as we go in there, me and Matt and Harry run all over the house, and we go downstairs to the basement, and there's a fridge in there, and it's filled with Budweiser. And they're like, oh, dude, because I was a nerdy, like, straight-laced kid, and the last thing on my mind was, like, drinking this beer.
The first
thing on their mind was they took it out, and they ran outside. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go outside. And so I was drinking this beer with them. So that's when my first beer.
Sal, first beer?
I honestly...
Like 12 or 13.
Okay.
I honestly don't remember. It was probably...
He was already drunk when he had it.
No, I honestly don't. I have no recollection of my...
He was too drunk on tequila.
No, it was probably... It was probably either a Mickey's or a Heineken or a Coors Light. It was one of those three.
You'd remember if it was a Mickey's.
Yeah, it might have been a Mickey's. I honestly can't remember, though. I do remember my first mixed drink was a margarita in Mexico when I was 13 at a bar behind a farmacia. Literally, you'd walk through the farmacia, and there'd be a guy at a door, and you'd talk to him, and he'd let you in the bar, the nightclub behind the pharmacy, and we were drinking 50-cent margaritas. I was 13, I think. That was my first mixed drink.
Mine was on a hot, and whenever I say
you
hot...
You had it from a baby bottle, right?
No, not quite.
Bourbon in a baby bottle. Yeah.
I was mowing the yard in southern Illinois where I grew up.
Is that a euphemism?
Mowing the yard, and it was a hot August afternoon, and hot in southern Illinois is like 115 degrees, so it was
hot.
That's hot. And it was an ice-cold Busch beer.
Nice.
Bush.
Yeah.
Nice. You went for the namesake.
Hey, it's what was Bush's tagline?
Back then, head for the mountains of Bush.
Head for the mountains of Bush. Yeah,
do you guys remember the Hams commercial?
Sure.
With the bear,
the cartoon bear.
Oh yeah, sure.
The Hams.
They had the baseball game and stuff. Hams the beer, and they had that like insulting Indian sound, like Native American sounding song.
Hams the beer refreshing. Hams the beer refreshing. I do remember that. Oh my god, that's bringing back.
Mr. Elder. Right. And back when they had.
Do you remember beer can collections? Elder siblings that had beer can collections?
I had
collections?
A six pack of what was Jimmy Carter's brother?
Billy Beer.
Billy Beer. Yeah, I had a six pack of Billy Beer.
It's not worth anything.
It's not worth anything.
I had a lot of stickers when I was a kid. We had it on our toy trunk. We had stickers of Budman.
Nice.
I miss when they marketed liquor to kids.
I had some of the coolest, maybe not the coolest, but definitely the redneckiest stickers as a kid. One of my sisters used to date a stock car racer, and he was really cool. He was like one of the few boyfriends of my sister's ever had that was really, I actually liked him because he was really cool. Because anytime he'd come around, because he was always traveling, racing, but whatever
he'd come around,
he would give me like a stack of like STP stickers.
That's Richard Petty.
yeah, like all sorts of.
You can tell I'm at least 50% redneck because I know that STP was Richard Petty.
I had STP stickers and like Firestone, you know, racing stickers and all sorts of stock car stickers on my toy chest when I was a kid.
See, my brother is a big stock car fan, and so whenever someone mentions the King, I automatically think of Kirby. He automatically thinks of Richard Petty.
Richard Petty. Yeah, I'm not a race guy. I've never been a race guy. Of all the sports I like, I've been to a couple, but we're now joined by Robert Elder of
Josh.
Elder. Yeah, you know, right?
Robert.
It's all good.
Sorry. Josh, Sam,
Robert Altman.
Back from the grave.
Josh Elder.
Back from the dead.
I will.
Good to be here.
Hi.
Nice to see you, man.
It's good. It's good.
So, your first beer.
Wow.
It's a round beer tonight.
I have no idea. I cannot remember my first beer.
I'm pretty sure my uncle...
Like, make up a story for that one.
My uncle like got me drunk at a wedding once when I was like 4.
That doesn't sound like it ends well.
Yeah.
That's the beginning of a very sad lifetime.
You know how that ends?
This was all above the book.
This is lifetime after.
Yeah. That ends with a career in comic books.
No. So this was just... like your run of the mill child abuse. It didn't escalate, you know, beyond that. No. just some light fondling. That didn't even count.
Hand holding.
He wasn't really into it.
Yeah.
He was like, well, I got you drunk. I probably should.
Yeah. You know, it's only fair.
Yeah, you know.
They're going to arrest me anyway.
The first time I got actually drunk, my sister's graduation party, so I was 12. I drank. You guys will remember these. I had a 2-liter bottle of Sun Country wine cooler.
Oh, yeah.
Peach.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love that they put wine coolers in the 2-liter plastic bottles like soda. And I drank it like soda, and I was gone.
I remember my first joint. I remember getting high for the first time.
I still haven't smoked.
I do remember. Really? Still? Never? Ever? Really?
Never ever.
No, seriously?
For real.
You have never ever... Wow.
Doesn't mean I'm not ever going to. Just never have.
Yeah,
oh,
me
let's
neither.
Go out back. We'll be right
really?
Back.
Well, once I was stayed... I haven't in years and years,
but... It amazes me that you never have, like at least one time.
I mean, I've seen it. It's been around. I just never partook.
I never inhaled. I did not inhale, Senator.
I looked at it sternly.
I vomited my first time.
Really?
I got really, really high, and then I made the mistake of going to a 7-Eleven and buying like $12 worth of chocolate products and eating them really quickly, and then... The next thing I know, I was
expelling the pot as it was the chocolate.
Well, it was the combination of being, you know, getting the munchies and eating way too much chocolate, and then and being like 13 or 14 years old when that was.
Also, the fact that you're part dog. Also,
I just can't.
So,
stop
so he
chocolate.
Also licked it back up. Yeah, when he threw it up.
That was implicit, but now it's all for everybody. The first time I got drunk. Actually, I was a total straight edge, and when I was an intern at DC,
it's another intern at DC story. That's right. You're famous for the infamous.
Yes, in certain circles. Yeah. So
I didn't even know you were an intern at
DC. I was there twice in 2000, 2001.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Drunk both.
The first time. I don't remember it. You know, I don't remember anything.
The first time he was sent home for being belligerent.
I started a fight. I punched, punched Neil in the mouth. my last day, I was supposed to have my exit interview, and it had, you know, come out at various points that I was, you know, I never drank at all, and they were like, "We're gonna get you a drink on your last day." And so it was the Batman editors, Bob Schreck and Nacho Castro and Michael Wright and all those guys, Matt Idelson. They all took me out. They got me one of those big punch bowl margaritas. I drank the whole thing in like 20 minutes.
Oh Jesus!
Like I was done. And we're going back. I'm like stumbling and
threw
stuff.
You into the fire with that.
And I like stumble into traffic. Nachi like
Let's
yanks me
tequila.
Out of debt.
That's how, you know, that's just how asshole, that's how asshole guys are, though. It's like, oh, really? You're nice, clean cut, never drank? Oh, let's go get you a giant punch bowl full of fucking
and not warn you that you're drinking yeah, way yeah, too fucking yeah,
it's,
fast. You
know? It's neon blue. How bad can it be? Come on.
You've never had sex? Let me get you the nastiest hair I can find and get you a nice STD to really, you know, initiate.
While you're drinking that, make sure you drink it through the straw and don't breathe.
Yeah. So,
I need a straw for my old style.
That would be baller right there. So I get back and they're like, you were completely wasted. They lock me in one of the offices in the hopes that I can remain hidden until I sober up. But they find me and they like bring me in and I'm like doing my exit interview. And about like 5 minutes into it, he's like, so... Are you drunk right now? And I was like,
Buttrick! This is a drunk, brother. This is not me drunk.
Is that, you know? No. That's preposterous. You know, come on.
So be ridiculous.
I've never drank a head in my life.
And so years later, I'm introduced to another intern at DC at like a party. This is at some con. And we're talking for a while. I was like, shit, are you the drunken intern? And I'm like, what? Nice. What? And wow. They're like, yeah, they tell us that story.
It's like they make it sound like you were a souse, like you were Neesman the
yeah,
whole time.
Yeah, yeah. No, come on.
Chris, you are a cautionary tale.
I mean, this is apparently like day one stuff. It's like, you know, here's your key card. Oh, and don't be the drunken intern.
It's almost like a film they show, you know, like sort of safety, intern safety. Do not drink margaritas.
I just want to say, you throw up in a trash can in New York one time and you get labeled.
I think it was the cab ride back from the one bar the one time in New York that
oh, when I'm hanging out in Times Square.
That's what sewed it up for me. I was in that cab with you.
Were you
talking to the cab driver quite a bit. It was pretty funny.
See, the thing is, I get easily as drunk as Chris does at conventions. I just get quieter than he does, luckily.
I get louder, and I talk to cabbies. It's like, let's go through Times Square. Was that the Times Square trip?
We were at a bar off of Times Square. Remember, that's the night that Kevin McDonald was at the bar? At the bar that we were at?
Yes. Yeah.
He doesn't remember that.
I went to that same bar two nights in a row that year. But yeah, the one night Kevin from Kids in the Hall was there. Was cool.
Nice.
And like last year, I ended up at a bar where Mike Myers showed up.
Yeah, I was at that place too. Yeah,
New York's a crazy town.
I love it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. I'm looking forward to this year. It'll be
John Suntress, he's an ugly fella, huh?
He's not handsome.
I kind of attracted though.
Yeah. There's a certain je ne sais quoi.
He has a quality.
Yes.
He's a quoi.
Undefinable.
Yes, there's a quoi.
B-double-E-double-R-U-N, beer run. B-double-E-double-R-U-N, beer run. All we need is a 10 and a 5, or a car and a key and a sober driver. B-double-E-double-R-U-N, beer run. Couple of frat guys from Abilene drove out all night to see Robert Earl Keen at the K-Pig, swine and soiree, dance, or baseball.
And we're back from our break of drinking. And
it's part two.
We're with Tony Akins.
Hi,
International
Tony.
Man of Mystery. Artist Supreme.
And I'm adjusting the mic.
Watch out, Seattle. Here he comes.
Yes.
My new best friend.
You're leaving us?
That is the breaking news. Is that breaking? It's been going around for a while.
Wow, you're leaving the Midwest to go to the rainy Pacific Northwest.
I'm leaving for Seattle, and I've done the research. The rain is not that bad.
It didn't rain at all the last time I was there. I was disappointed. Yeah.
Beautiful city.
It's like, where's all the rain?
Absolutely
like
beautiful
days,
city.
No rain.
Yeah,
loved
it's kind of crazy. It is beautiful. That's one of the reasons why.
Yeah.
I'm going to visit. I'm going to come and visit.
Come
on. I stay with you, right?
There's absolutely. No absolutely.
Emerald City. You'll put us up for Emerald City Comic Con?
You know what? I promised Bill that spot, but if Bill gets comps.
Bill who?
Willingham.
Oh, screw him.
Oh, hey, Bill and I are old pals.
So
no problem.
So if
wait, the guy who used to do Elementals?
Yeah, that guy. In Ironwood?
That book is old.
Covered the Elemental sex specials. The Elemental sex specials. Tony and Bill both worked on those, too.
Come on in, Paul.
A little closer to the mic.
How close do I have to be? Oh, my
God. It's loud. There you go. Yeah, you got to kind of swallow it. We got to turn the gains up
because
it's
Hold
so
on.
Loud in here.
Hey, what's up?
Turn them up a little bit. Exactly.
There you go. Give me a check.
Check.
Oh, there he is. There he is.
Bill Williams. Yeah, so Bill has he's claimed. He's asked for the sofa. So he, you know, if he gets comped, then a hotel room is sweet or something.
He's never going to return a call from us again, ever. Emails.
All right. We're also joined by Paul Mounts, returning guest to the show. So have you passed the Kirby Lee FF mark yet?
I can't. Fantastic Four got canceled.
Oh,
it's
cool.
FF now.
Oh, that's
sad. I was at 90 issues with FF 588. If it had gone to FF 600, my issue that would have broken Stan and Jack, the 102nd issue, would have been FF 600. But
no, I did not even know that.
Are they going to bring?
So Jonathan Hickman is a dream killer.
Yeah, but Fantastic Four will come back.
Will it?
There's no way that Marvel will not publish Fantastic Four a year from now. I almost guarantee.
So
you guys are cynical.
So you
don't like FF?
I think it's fine, but it's not
FF,
gonna.
I gotta say, FF is a brilliant book.
It's very good. I've enjoyed it. It's
you just want it to go away. That's what you're saying.
No, I'm not saying I want it to go away. I want
so
you to get the
I want you I to want, get the recognition you so richly deserve.
It's too late.
Hey, there's like 17 X-Men books. Why can't there be two Fantastic Four books? There could be an FF and a Fantastic Four. Why not?
Then that would be Fantastic Eight.
Well, technically,
I was told there would be no math.
Yeah, right.
I'm an artist. I don't do
math. All right. Okay. I have a technical question for you.
42.
So
that's the answer.
I just kind of for shits and giggles. I'm a graphic designer by day.
Don't.
And I love comics.
Dying.
And
dying,
you swear by night.
And I swear by night. And drink. I've become very interested in doing comic book lettering, not as a career, but more as just because I want to understand
hobby.
Because I want to understand the craft a little bit
certainly,
more.
Certainly, yeah.
Okay, so if you can help walk me through the
how to be a letterer.
No, just
okay, there's an alphabet.
Here the nuts and bolts question: what gets done first, the coloring or the lettering? That's the big question.
Yes.
Yes.
Tony, do you think...
Thank you for nothing,
Paul. Do you think over the next 6 hours you could teach me how to draw?
Absolutely.
Do you think that's possible while we're sitting here?
The line art is scanned.
Okay.
While I'm coloring it, letterer is lettering it. And then once the coloring comes in, they can replace the line art scan with the color file, because the color file and line art scan are the exact same pixel dimensions.
Okay.
So, yes, they're both being done at the same time. So the answer was yes.
So my big question is, you know...
That was your big question.
Well,
you don't get any more.
Okay, my secondary question is that the basic lettering, you know, your word balloons and that kind of stuff, the narration boxes, that's pretty easy to pop those in, letter them, export to Photoshop, and you've got those as layered. But sound effects for the letterer are very based in color. And if you're designing sound effects and you don't see the letter or and you don't see the colored page, then you can't know what palette to use.
Yes.
You're not helping me here.
If we start talking...
Well, look, okay, but a lot of that stuff is adjusted. Same thing with caption boxes.
Okay.
If he does a bunch of yellow caption boxes, 900 pages with a bunch of yellow skies,
he's gonna
one of us is going to change it.
Okay.
Right, so it might be him, it might be me.
Well, I have a feeling it's going to be the letter. You're like, no, dude, hit the swatches panel because I ain't recoloring this.
Maybe, unless it's, say, like a Flash comic and all Flash's caption boxes have always been red and yellow. So,
oh, okay.
Then the color is just the screw.
Okay. So it's kind of, for like a band analogy, your letterer and colorist are kind of your rhythm section. They have to work together.
No, the colorist is the lead singer and lead guitarist.
He's playing a double headed, 12 string and. Yeah.
So. The letter and the color. Right. We're the guys that get the book out.
We're not going to start
on Fridays when it's 9 o'clock and the editors are waiting for us to finish. We're
and that's why I asked that. Just because
it all starts with the writers.
Yeah,
without
I mean,
the writers, there would just be nothing.
Really? Really?
Really? I've just done 20 pages with no script whatsoever. I don't know who you're working with.
Yeah. He says that because there's lots of pages of script hanging on the walls around us in this nice writer's gallery that we have here.
Yeah, you know, I see this is an interesting dynamic because we have aspiring writer, aspiring letterer, established colorist, and established...
Record-breaking colorist.
And established... Do you ink your own stuff, by the way, Tony?
I do when I'm able to. I've inked issues of Jack, you know, but it's a time thing. It's a production thing. Usually, you know, I get the script by the time I do the breaks. And going back to the lettering, the first thing I take into account is where the work balloons are going to go. I mean, that's like the most important part of by doing the breakdown because
the composition
it has to be in the composition because you leave with the word balloons, you leave with the caption. That's like the most important thing on the page. So after that, you know, it's just, you know, going in and getting the drawing done.
One of my favorite artist breakdowns, not even breakdowns, but finished art to look at is Tommy Lee Edwards. Do you ever see his finished art? I mean, No,
I never see his finished art.
Well,
printed in a comic book.
But I loved him as Two-Face. No, he was great as Two-Face.
His pre-colored, pre-lettered pages.
Yeah, okay. That's not finished art.
He actually designs in the balloons or the spaces, which, you know, from an artist's perspective, I can see the advantage because you're not drawing the backgrounds that would be behind the work.
Yeah.
And so I imagine that it would save a lot of time, but
because then you're spending the time to, you know, create the ellipse and the tails for all of the
balloons. He's really just more kind of leaving a space.
Oh, leaving a space.
At that point,
I've seen that, and that's kind of, it's so risky because it went,
what happens if the script changes?
Because the script almost always changes, especially with a Willingham script, because Bill's, because Bill's scripts are, in the editor will sing this praise. His first drafts are like so close to finish that, you know, there's no mussing with them. And when after, you know, I'm done with my bit, he will rewrite, you know. So
sure,
you know. So I could,
because he may see something in your art that sparks a different idea for how the or you may have interpreted, you know.
Yeah, I could never, you know, leave an empty space. So I just, you know, make sure
finish the page.
I plot the page where I know approximately where the workload and the captions are going to go, and I just make sure not to like spend too much time on the details that are going in that area of the panel because I know it's going to get covered. So,
and of course, we're talking about North American production line comics, too. If you look at like an artist like Mobius, who, you know, he letters the stuff, he designs the lettering as part of the artwork. Dave Sim on Cerevis, the lettering was part of the art. I mean, it was integral to the art. Will Eisner, same thing. The lettering and everything was...
Oh, we were talking about American Flag and how big, you know, the lettering was. Yeah,
so integral to that.
Yeah. Yeah, he worked very closely with Ken Brusnak on that stuff.
Thank you.
The guy that we could never, ever fucking remember. Yeah, Ken Brusnak.
Jill Thompson, she letters on her own page. You know, I mean...
Amanda Connor. If she had her way, she would letter all her own stuff. She lettered the Crow all by herself. We did a bunch of spot illos for Revolver Magazine. She used to letter all that stuff. She did stuff for Rolling Stone. She lettered all that stuff. But, you know, the monthly comics, you just can't take the time to do that.
Yeah. And that's always a question I have for... You know, Paul, you have colored so many comics and done it so well for a long time. I mean, you're one of the top notch colorists in this industry. How long does it, on average,
being the best garbage man in town?
I've been on the phone with him. We talk a lot on the phone. I won't say the title, but you have colored like 10 pages while I've been on the phone with him. It's like, I just colored 10 pages.
No, I've colored a page while we're on the phone sometimes. It depends on the book. It depends on how much is done on the page.
I colored a pinup earlier this year just for shits and giggles. No, yeah, no shit. And I'm just like, Jesus, this was hard.
Tony just tried to color a pin.
It's fucking, it's hard. It is not easy. You, How long does it take you to do a full 20 or 22 page comic?
You know, honestly, it's
30
it's,
years.
No, it is really, yes, it is. It's been 20 yeah. years of training,
yeah, exactly.
And then it's like Picasso doing the sketch. It's like, you did that in 15 minutes, you're going to charge me $10,000. Yeah, but it was the 30 years of training before I
we had this conversation sketch. Earlier this week. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it depends on the book. It depends on. You know, it honestly it depends on the deadline. My one editor makes fun of me so much because I will not give up a page until it's the deadline. Whether I have 4 days to color a book or 4 months to color a book,
yeah, it's
just because
on the deadline.
I want to hang on to those pages and work them as much as I can.
What happens if you give your pages to your editor before the deadline? Your deadline starts shrinking.
Or they'll make a lot of corrections.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. No, you know what?
Hold on to that son of a bitch like a snappy
no,
turtle.
No, honestly, yeah. it's not that so much. It's just that I will hang on to the pages and rework them and play with them and like see how the storytelling works with other pages in the book and things like that as long as I can. And, you know, I'm sure I've given Tom Brevoort and Lauren Sankovic gray hairs. I don't think she has gray hairs, but he has a few.
So. I can't see him under that hat of his. Don't get me started on the hat.
But I mean, you're a hat guy. What's wrong with Tom's hat?
I'm not a big fan of his hat. It's the wrong hat for his head.
I like Tom's hat.
Hat snob.
Because you know what? You remember it. Anybody can wear a
your
Sox
hats
hat.
Your hats make you look ridiculous. You think they're awesome.
You think it's the hat?
I'm sure he thinks it's the hat.
That's very nice.
Why have we not had Paul on way more often?
Some are redhead. Nobody likes the gingers.
Well, you smell like cinnamon. I mean,
that's not but, cinnamon.
But, you know, okay, so you basically, you don't have a it takes me this amount of time.
If I had to average out, I can do a typical book in about a week and a half, depending on how complicated. You know, a Brian Hitch book is a lot different than an Amanda Conner book. It's a lot different than a Steve Epting book.
What? Why?
Which is, because Brian Hitch draws every single piece of rubble and every, you know, we just did that Avengers 12.1 book, and there was panels in there where, you know, Brian Michael Bendis had written a script where there's 15 characters talking in one panel, and Brian will draw every one of those characters and draw them in the correct speaking order, and they all have different costumes, and he'll draw, you know, he'll design a special conference room for the Avengers that has to be lit a certain way with light coming in, and the shadows have to cast a certain way.
Just the palette with Amanda Conner is totally different.
Yeah, Amanda's a completely different.
Digitally?
It was like, I saw the transition happen.
Do you remember the first Olaf
doing all the optics? He did Akira digitally long before, because he invented that whole, it was a Cod Barrett system, it was all vector based. And that's what, I think even Wildstorm was using that for a while. And the first image books were all colored using that system. And everybody shifted over to Photoshop around 93 or 94.
As soon as layers were integrated into Photoshop.
Right, Photoshop 3 had layers. That was what really made the difference.
Sorry, nerdy graphic design talk.
It's true.
Well, do you remember what the first book you did fully in Photoshop?
I think it might have been something for Continuity Comics for Neil Adams. I think it was maybe an issue of Nighthawk or something like
that.
Which is funny because Chris Adams just called me the other day looking for those files, and it's like, again, nerd talk, but like those were on SideQuest cartridges.
I got a drive. I got a couple drives back in the office.
Yeah, but do you have a computer with a SCSI connection?
Yes, I do. I can actually hook up my SideQuest.
Oh my God, really?
I have an old G3 that still has a SCSI connector.
Nice.
And I have a SCSI to FireWire adapter.
Because
I've got a SCSI scanner, an old action SCSI scanner.
That is really nerdy.
Yeah,
we have Chris and I work together, and we have a vault of iOmega. What was the other
Zip drive.
Zip and the Jazz.
We're trying to recall the name of a zip drive.
Yeah,
what was it being called?
Zip drive.
It was awesome at the time.
Oh my God, I can't believe.
Oh,
100 meg on a cartridge that you can rewrite.
It's unbelievable.
I remember the sidequesterize it would take for just like one page. If it was maybe a 20 meg file, I would save it with like stuff it and then put it on a SideQuest cartridge. It would take like 20 minutes to transfer one page. And then we'd FedEx it out.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, and it was
FedEx
awesome.
It out. It's like, wow, we're in the future.
No shit. No shit.
Well, see, we've lost our audience. We got so geeky our audience.
We're getting way too graphic design.
Molly from Comic Book Slumber Party site. They're talking like horse and carriage shit.
I remember a program before. It was before Photoshop. It was a coloring program.
There's one called Color It.
What was it?
There's one called Color It.
No, it was... I can't remember. It was one of the first programs that I remember working on. I want to say it was Amiga something, but I cannot remember what it was called. And I remember it was the first program I sat down and I was coloring like an apple. Like I was like, you know, putting a little red and then like a highlight on a round object. I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. It's like 1986.
The paint
bucket's
awesome.
Yeah.
When I first got my computer, I had never even touched a computer. The guy's hooking it up for me, and I literally had my first job. It was in trading cards for Marvel for licensing. This is even before the continuity stuff. And I had to learn how to use a computer, how to use Photoshop and Illustrator in one day and send out the files the next day. And it was a long day.
Well, you know, the first completely digital comic was created here in Chicago, right?
My Science.
So go Chicago.
When I first got my computer, the first thing my mom asked me was, "Well, how do you fill it when it runs out of color?" Just looking for the little valve.
Now we're looking at digital or 3D printers. That's the next thing. Have you seen that? That stuff's
cool.
Insane. 3D printers, it prints on like, it uses like a, I don't know what the heck it is. It's like a dust, but it prints, like you create a CAD drawing of some sort of object, and it prints it out in 3D, so it's an actual solid three-dimensional object.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they've been around for 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah, but they're
but they're getting to the point now of like fast and affordable.
Yeah.
In 5 years, you will have a 3D printer. Designers will have 3D printers on their desktops printing out their models.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Oh, it's amazing.
Printing out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tony, have you ever thought about going completely digital?
Oh, yeah, I have. I have. It's.
Are you close to it?
I'm fairly close to it. I mean, other than the coloring part.
He wants to steal my CT.
You know, I always wonder about that with traditional comic book pencilers and inkers because of what it affects you in the secondary market.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you know, because I'm sure you sell your original art.
I do. Yeah.
And so do you.
That's the primary thing that governs me from completely going digital is the second market. You know, because I like having the sale from those other pages, and I just enjoy pencil and brush on paper. I think it's I just enjoy the sensation of it.
I know some guys are doing like a hybrid.
We'll do their layouts digitally
and then ink it.
Right.
There's
tons of. I mean, I watch Norton work. Gene Ha, who was just did Comic Book Slumber Party, he brought pages from his Superman story, and he's not even working on Bristol. He's working on 11x17 Xerox paper, great markers, scanning that in, and then adjusting the levels. I mean, so there's a ton of ways to make comics now, which
faster and cheaper.
And I understand that. And if I have an opportunity to go that route on a job or two, sure. You know, I mean, I'm working on my own thing right now, and I'm doing the breakdowns, and I'm thinking, okay, when I get to actually drawing this first issue, how's it going to happen? Is it going to happen digitally, or am I going to do fast and cheap and scan and adjust the levels?
I'm sure it may depend on the project. Is a lot of it. You know, we talked to Mike, and I assume that the stuff that he's doing for Battle Pug is all digital,
yeah,
because it's a webcomic, right, and he just wants to be able to hit the times to
probably
get that out there.
Not a huge market for the,
yeah, you know,
pages,
people aren't going to, you know, buy, yeah, that.
It's,
you
not
know,
Batman. It's not Superman. It's not something, you know. That's,
right.
Exactly. You know, but I also think, you know, I look at what has happened to comics as kind of a craft. I just think because maybe the advancements in technology that what we saw in the 80s with the self-created comic books, that it's probably even closer to being all under one roof, one creator, go out, yeah, make your own, yeah, comic.
I mean, you see a lot more guys who, yeah, are inking their own stuff because they can do stuff digitally.
Oh, draw, ink, I get, color, letter, all of it.
I get files so many different ways now. Barry Kitson's drawing a few issues of FF right now, and there are there's panels where there might be like gun constructs or some of Invisible Woman's like constructs. They're done. He sends them to me with that stuff on layers in the line art. Steve Epting does that too sometimes, so we can actually do them as, you know, special effects much easier than trying to just have that be part of the art. As a colorist, I can tell you one of the banes of coloring is when the artist cares so much about the secondary market that like Brian Hitz, we had this one
second
story.
Time we've had this conversation tonight talking about
no, no,
the
but
same
it was
thing.
Going no. back to that because I wanted to make a point on that. It was like I worked on this Fantastic Four with Brian Hitch where there was this snowstorm. It's like, Brian, you know, we can drop the snow in digitally because he wanted me to like blur some of the snow and everything anyway to go like a blizzard. So stop drawing all the snowflakes because I have to like color around every one of those little snowflakes and we're going to take them out anyway and digitally blur them and everything. So just don't. But no, I have to draw the snowflakes in because it won't look good on the original art. Nice.
Yeah. You're right. Mike, fuck you!
Mike Waringo was the same way. He was like really big on that. It's like, you know, I know we're going to do the Human Torch's flame as a digital effect, but like, I want to draw it in because, you know, it's part
it's
of the
gonna
original
look
art.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's a fetish. It's
a sickness.
It's a sickness. It's a form of, you know, autism, I believe, you know.
Drawing comics. It's not.
Who was?
It's not a natural.
I think it was John Byrne who originally made the argument. It's like the actual original art is the printed comic. It's not the line art drawings go into it. The original art is the printed book. That's
when it's finished. It's final. That's where it's supposed to be seen.
Right. I ran into Monty Beauchamp. I ran into Monty, who is the editor in chief for Black Magazine, and asking about the art show that he was doing in New York, which went really well. And we're talking about the differences in culture between LA and here, and how they really embrace, you know, the that sort of fringe, kind of cutting edge comic that you see in Black art that you see in Black Magazine. And even though the show went really well, he's like, you know, we want to treat it like art all the time. It's not. It's entertainment, which it is, you know. And so I can kind of see
it's storytelling.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's always the fine line. Is it art? Is it commerce? Is it entertainment?
Yes.
There's, yes. Exactly. Because, you know, there's a.
Well, I mean, if you look at other mediums, storytelling mediums, it's like, okay, you don't really see a market for film sells. I mean, there's a little bit of a market for
right.
that, but not much.
Animation,
but
you know.
Because a film isn't complete without the sound effects, without, you know, special
oh,
effects,
yeah.
without, you know, everything else put in on it, you know. But, you know, the pencil page, the ink page of a comic book is, for whatever reason, it has that market. It has people want. I think it's more along the lines of that collectability
of course.
Want something that no one else now can ever own.
Course,
I will
yeah.
burn it down so no one else can have it. And that's, you know, that crazy collectability about, you know, having something that no one else has.
What?
Well, you know, as a colorist, you know, the penciler gets pages, the inker gets pages, and do you ever just sit there and go, come on, what the fuck, guys?
Well, I used to sell the blue, you know, the blue line when I was coloring before
yeah.
digital. I hand-painted all the pages on what was called blue line artboard that had the line art last day overlay. I used to take those to conventions and sell them, but yeah, there's none of that anymore. So.
Yeah.
Just start selling, like, CD-ROMs of digital.
There was a show on recently where there was some investigator who was tracking down a guy who was buying all of Adolf Hitler's art.
I didn't see that. Yeah.
What it was.
CSI.
Austria?
Yeah, it was something like that. Anyway, so this guy tracks this man down. He's like independently wealthy, and he's acquiring all of these Hitler paintings.
I did see that.
And the guy's like, why are you doing this? Are you kind of like, you know, some sort of neo-Nazi? He's like, no.
Because he was the opposite. He wanted to destroy it all.
He was destroying them piece by piece. He was destroying all these paintings.
What the heck was that?
I don't know.
That was a TV show. It was a TV show.
Yeah, it was on TV. Yeah,
but I can't remember what.
Leverage?
No, because I don't really ever watch Leverage. It might have been Burn. What's that? Burn?
No, it wasn't Burn Notice.
Might have been Burn Notice. No. I think it might have been Burn Notice. Because the wife had something. I don't know.
This guy's buying the John Wayne Bobbitt clown paintings.
Yeah, that's just.
Or John Wayne Gacy, I'm sorry.
John Wayne Gacy clown paintings are terrible.
Yeah. No, the John Wayne Gacy clown paintings.
That's a whole different kind of painting.
People like went crazy buying those things. He was still doing them in prison and selling them.
Until they passed that law where you couldn't sell or you couldn't make money on death row. Isn't that now you can't actually make.
Haven't kept up with that law, but I'm glad you know it.
Well, I think it was because of him that they passed that law that you couldn't make money while on death row. You couldn't sell stuff. You couldn't sell your autobiography or whatever, you know.
Because of Gacy, I think it was
because of Gacy. Yeah, I think it was.
Or O.J. Simpson, one of the two.
Or O.J. Could have been O.J. Although.
No, that was part of the civil suit, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Goes to the civil suit award.
Because he was not convicted.
Right, it wasn't the state case, it was the civil suit.
It was the civil case, but did they prevent him from making money, or did they put a lien against that? Any money he made just went to the Goldman family?
I think it was like a lien.
I
can't speak definitively.
But
comics.
Wow.
So Fantastic Four. So the Fear Itself stuff. What are you doing with the Fear Itself?
Just covers for the Youth and Revolt Fear Itself.
Which is why you're here.
Which is why I'm here, but there's no books to sign.
To not sign any books.
Sorry, Lauren.
Yeah.
Tony, what are you working on nowadays?
Wow, I've got...
What should you be working on right now?
I should be working on this really fantastic pitch by Brian Salazar and Will Pfeiffer. It's a cool pitch. Can I talk about it?
I don't see why not. We don't have any reason not to. We're not. Like,
you're asking us if you can talk.
Yeah,
about
I didn't talk about it. I didn't talk about it yet because I wasn't sure if you wanted to. You know, like actually commit to it on the air.
Oh no!
Hey, I've been like, I can't talk about this shit. So.
I've committed.
But we have no reason not to talk about it.
No, we have no reason to talk about it. It's a great pitch. It's called Hard Case. Wait a second, we had to change the name.
Well, no, we're keeping it. I don't know.
It was funny because when you realized that name was already taken, I went through an old box and I actually found
an issue.
I found Hard Case pencils that.
What?
Who was it? Eclipse? Was it Eclipse?
I think it was Eclipse or
Eclipse had put out in order to promote the Ultraverse. Remember that?
It was an Ultraverse. There was an Ultraverse book called Hard Case.
Hard Case. They told Dave Gibbons did the cover.
And I didn't know that when I wrote the initial pitch.
God.
And then I found out. I'm like, oh crap, we're gonna have to change the name. But I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We used to talk so badly about the Ultraverse being launched. It's like, oh, they're gonna launch an entirely new superhero universe just through marketing.
But I think it was two words, hard case.
Yeah,
ours
it was
one.
Okay.
Now it is. So anyway.
So yeah, hard case is
tell me how awesome it is.
It's pretty cool. I really like it because it's subversive for one thing, which is I'm all about that. And it's about a guy who's a bounty hunter. And he goes after I don't want to say rogue, but he goes after the bad guys.
Supervillains.
Yeah, he goes after the bad guys who've jumped their bounty. Because after the hero catches them, kicks their ass, throws them in jail, these guys always jump bail.
And they're criminals. They're bad guys. They have no reason to go to court. They don't want to show up in court.
I think it's a terrific story.
Oh.
You know, I like the setting of it. I like the relationship that... Is it Frank?
Hank
Case. Has with his son, like Hank's former life as a child star on a TV show.
Don't give away too much. Don't give away too much.
Am I here?
Jeez.
Okay, so I got that happening. Then
And of course, I'm just going to say it because I've been wanting to say this for a long time. I was named to the Buffy team, a Dark Horse.
Yeah. You know, nice.
Exactly.
Congratulations. Exactly. Buffy. So, verse.
I have no idea what's going on. They haven't given me a schedule yet, but
you still have the same editor.
Same editor.
All right.
Yeah. I actually called Dark Horse this week just to like say, hey, I'm still
hey
here.
Hey guys, I'm pretty
the schedule. You know,
whatever's
what happening.
You want me to draw something?
I've friended Rebecca Isaacs, who's just like an awesome young woman. She's like super talented, super super nice, you know, just to like stay in the loop until things get rocking. You know, I don't know, calling editors, getting stuff rolling. I'm working on my own title called Dread. Yeah, I know.
What?
Yeah, it's been a long time, and this is like the time to do it because I've been working on this thing for like 5 years, and there are other.
He's a judge, right?
Yeah.
But like circuit court, just you know, small
yeah. Claims Judge Dread. Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it because if I talk about it, it'll sound like every other comic. And I just need to do it and get it out there. End of story.
That's the way to do it.
Right yeah. After Heart Case.
Right, yeah. I don't want that getting in the way of anything you're currently supposed to be working on, like my book. Don't.
No. My schedule has just become so free in like the last 12 hours. My girlfriend's moved to Seattle.
I just told Chris, I'm like, yeah, I gotta get Tony to get this done before he moves to Seattle, because then I can't get my hands on him. Then
yeah, you gotta keep him within a 20-mile radius.
I could guarantee you the pitch in like the next 3 weeks.
All right.
Nice.
So,
I like that.
Yeah, I like to hear that. That's what I want to hear.
Absolutely. Because this shit has got to happen.
Yeah, baby. And any potential publisher out there that's interested in seeing it in 3 weeks or so.
Seriously, because we're dropping it on, like, we have three publishers lined up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know.
Get on it hot.
It's hot. I'm telling you.
It's going to be hot. It's the next big thing.
So, what do we got to look forward to here as we wrap up May? We got,
I have no idea.
We got any
FF.
FF.
I got to tell you, if you like Fantastic Four, the way that ended, if you like the first couple of issues of FF, Jonathan Hickman has had this storyline planned out 3 years in advance. It just gets better and better. It's shipping like bi-weekly now, so I'm actually working on the next two or three issues all at once because it's different artists on all of them. But the scripts are just amazing. And what he's got coming up over the next year or so in FF is incredible. All these hundreds of plot threads that he's woven in over the last year and a half now all kind of come to fruition. And it's pretty amazing to see him keep all the balls in the air and make it all work.
He's a big concept guy.
Yeah, yes he is.
He's a big ball in the air guy.
Big baller.
And if that dude's a baller, I hope you like getting balled.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm waiting for the FF Omnibus.
That's a little
ways 588 off. Issues in one volume.
I got the first two, but I'm waiting for the Hickman Omnibus.
Oh, I thought you meant the entire Hickman Omnibus. Run from Stan and Jack.
Everything.
The whole 588 issue run. That
well,
was
one book.
One book.
Yeah, one big fucking tome.
Sort of be like that DC, history of DC, 75 years.
I tell you, have you got that yet?
No, I'm waiting for it to come in.
It's 32 pages because they keep telling the same story over and over again.
Have you guys seen that the Tashin DC 75th anniversary
yeah,
book?
Yeah, it's huge. It's just massive.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's beautiful book.
It's awesome.
That's ridiculous.
He wasn't gonna get it until I bought it and had it delivered at work, and he started looking. He's like, "All right, yeah, I gotta get that.
I need yeah. that. I may have to kill a water buffalo at some point.
Yeah,
and that'll make the perfect weapon. This is gigantic. It's the size of a car. I think I lived in an apartment smaller than that book at one time in my life.
You could hollow it out, crawl up
oh, yeah,
inside of it, and
it.
Live. Absolutely, absolutely. All right, Laura, well, are we all finished up here?
I can't hear anymore. But the din yeah. in this place is just overwhelming at this point.
Many,
so.
And that's
just
many, many happy
yeah,
people.
Seriously.
Oh, see, now she comes back. Now that we're all done. Now that we're done talking about the geeky stuff, she comes back.
The old geeky stuff.
You missed the best.
You left because we were stuff. Talking about
We've
all the geeky
ever,
graphic design stuff.
Yeah, we talked about Fantastic Four. Did we talk about Jurassic Park?
Yeah, twice.
Shit.
Jurassic Park 2.
We did a whole thing on Green Lantern.
We came up with Jurassic Park 5.
right here.
You missed it.
Happy. All right, everyone, thank you very much for listening. We want to thank all of our guests tonight. Mike Norton, Sean McKeever, Paul Mounts, Tony Akins, Josh Elder, Brian Salazar. Want to thank Dal and Patrick and everyone at Challengers Comics and Conversation
and Rogues
for
Gallery.
Hosting it, and the Rogues Gallery for this amazing art go show
by,
that they have here.
Youth and Revolt.
Fear Itself, Youth and Revolt. McKeever's flipping us off, so don't go buy Youth and Revolt. And so
don't
is Mike.
Go buy their book.
Don't go buy
suck.
Youth and Revolt.
Buy it for the covers. Just buy it for the covers.
Don't go to www.battlepug.com and check out Mike's awesome
revolt against Youth and Revolt.
Against Youth and Revolt. And go to SeanMcKeever.com.
Youth and Revolt. Want to throw a shout out to Double Feature Comics from the Four Star Studios guys.
Yes, a new one came out.
Absolutely. New one came out. Monsterology and Kid Cthulhu is your new addition.
The horror double feature.
Yep, so go and support that.
Chris Mitten, who is here today, but did not join us. But shout out to
Criminal Macabre, coming from he and Steve Niles. Yes. To check out his awesome work with Anthony Johnson in Wasteland. And I just bought a page of his from the Queen and Country Declassified
Kane Lynch.
Series.
Oh.
Yep. No, it's from the Queen and Country Declassified series they did. So, yeah, go check out all of that awesome stuff. I want to thank everyone for listening. Remember to come back in June, right?
We'll be back in June. Sure,
all right,
why not?
We'll be back in June.
I don't have anything going on.
Yeah. In the meantime?
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in
and around
comics.